everyone, and welcome to Rewatchable episode number 187. Today we're going to be talking about Buffy the Vampire Slayer season 4 episode 20 The Yoko Factor and Angel season 1 episode 20 Warzone. As usual, if you'd like to get in contact with us, please email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter at re_watchable. You can find us on this post on hypable.com or check us out at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. I'm Karen, and today I'm joined by the ABCs. I've got Ariana, Brittany, and Karen. Hi, guys.
That's so cute.
Let's kick off with some fun facts. Caitlin, would you like to go first?
Oh, God, I've been trying to think of one. It's not been a fun week. my fun fact will be that I'm about to start reading The Handmaid's Tale for my lit theory class, and that seems unfortunately appropriate.
I have not read that, but I really want to. I thought it was about something completely different, or I think I mixed it up with a different book, and when somebody told me what it was actually about, I was like, oh, okay, but I think I'd like to read that at some point, too. Ariana, what about you?
My fun fact is that it's also been a depressing week, but yesterday I went to the LA protests, and there was over 8,000 people there, and it was really uplifting. People brought their kids and stuff, and it was just a very positive experience. The police were very helpful. They shut down a lot of downtown. I think what was most uplifting, though, was seeing because we shut down downtown, and so there was people who were stuck in their cars trying to get places. But nobody said anything mean. There was actually a lot of people who came out of their cars and were cheering and honking their horns and cheering, and so that was really nice because we were super inconveniencing them and they were just who cares. Where's that too? So that was really great to see.
I saw a lot of pictures and videos coming out of both the LA protests and the New York protests, and it was just between the people's signs and, coming together and everything, it seemed like it would be really cool to be in the middle of that. I mean, granted, not for the reason they're happening, but I can understand how that would be uplifting, being surrounded by people who feel the same way that you do.
Yeah.
And Brittany, what about you?
My fun fact is I was inadvertently in a protest yesterday because I was attending an event near Trump Tower, which was unfortunate, but I saw Fantastic Beasts last night and it was pretty good. Not gonna lie, it was pretty good. J.K. Rowling and Eddie Redmayne gave a talk before the movie, and it was to benefit her charity Lumos, and it was awesome. It was kind of cool. I got to hang out with some hypeable people, including Andrew, who I didn't know was in New York City until I ran into him in Columbus Circle. And just, randomly on the street, I just happened to find him. And he's like, what are you doing here? And I'm like, I'm going to the same event you are probably, but I didn't even know you were on this coast. So that was fun.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, it was really, really, really random. But the movie, I won't say much about, but it was surprisingly good. A lot of people after the film were afraid to say it was good. Everyone was like, so what'd you think? And before everyone responded, within the group of people I was with, they were like, it was good. They were afraid to say it was good, which is interesting. So I'm really excited to hear what other people think when it comes out this week.
Interesting. Cool. All right. I'm getting a little more excited about it.
Yeah, I'm supposed to go see it next Saturday. And I was actually not planning to see it, but I got tickets from someone. And now you made me excited, Brittany. That's good.
I forgot that it comes out this week.
I have another fun fact. Today is Chris Jackson. Yes, is that his name? Christopher Jackson. It's his last performance as George Washington.
Oh.
It's just made me really sad.
Yeah, thanks for that. Oh, he's fantastic. My fun fact is that I also had a depressing week, and yesterday Kristen and I built a bed out of pillows and watched 4 episodes of Buffy and Angel, and it was actually really nice. And I ate a lot of pizza and candy, and you know what? It helped.
I'm so happy for you and your pillow fort, and I'm jealous that you have someone to watch Buffy with, because it's usually just me sitting in my room yelling at my computer.
I will say that, like, it is, like, I have this tendency to look over at her and see how she's reacting, and especially during the Oz episode, I was, like, trying to be a little subtle about it, but I couldn't because I know how much she likes Oz, so, yeah, that was fun. It is actually, like, not to brag, but it actually is really great watching it with somebody who hasn't seen it before and kind of seeing, like, their pure reactions to it.
Yeah.
It's cool.
I can imagine. That's why I loved watching Downton Abbey, like, bootleg, and then watching it in American again with, like, my family. Because, it is pretty great. I've actually decided to embrace how much I hate Buffy, the character, and sometimes the show. The same way that Brittany embraced her hatred for Cora. And it's been really helpful. I think I enjoy this show more as a whole now. So,
well, this should be fun.
I'm actually really looking forward to the discussions for both of these episodes in particular. So let's just jump right into it. First, we're going to be talking about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, episode 420, The Yoko Factor. And in this episode, Buffy continues to be a bitch to her friends while Giles sings and gives us full forearm. Spike preys on the Scoobies' insecurities to tear them apart, and Angel shows up in town to have a cockfight with Riley. It's a great summation of this. To kick it off, I want to talk about Spike trying to tear the gang apart, because I found this so interesting because he knows them so well in order to do this. He knows all of their weaknesses, and it's not surprising because it's Spike and he is intelligent and he does pay attention, but just imagine, like, how much time he's had to have spent with them to understand the intricacies of their relationship with each other in order to tear them down.
Yeah, I mean, they're not too difficult to figure out, so I'm not surprised that he spent a lot of time with them locked up in that bathroom. Bathtub. So it's not surprising that he's got them pinned. Was I surprised at how easily they fell? I don't know. I was a little bit, No, I guess not. I wasn't.
I wasn't either.
Nope.
Yeah, I wasn't either.
Yeah, they are not too great at communication, talking with each other about their problems, and they tend to... I mean, we saw it even between Buffy and Riley, where, you know, he kind of decides to just leave instead of actually talking about what needs to be talked about. And to be fair, Buffy kind of shut down and didn't allow that conversation to happen either.
But didn't he just find out his best friend died? So I was like, yeah.
That was at the very end, yeah. So, but let's go through each of the characters, because I think it's really interesting the things that bother them. Some of them are, I think they're all pretty obvious, but... kicking it off with Giles, you know, really does feel like a useless, unemployed old guy, and he just keeps drinking and drinking throughout this episode, which is, on one hand, very funny, but on the other, kind of depressing, and I just thought it was interesting that they brought up what we've been talking about for quite some time regarding his character.
Yeah. They really need to find something to do with Giles, because... this thing where he, like, sits at home and waits for the phone to ring is, like, I feel like it's not beneficial to him. Like, either they're going to have to make him leave soon because he's kind of useless, or they need to figure out something. I don't know.
Yeah, it's really
frustrating. Like, he needs a new library.
Yeah, exactly. He needs something. Like, even, like, he has, like, his little sex partner friend who comes every now and then he has... Buffy coming in being like, I'm going to talk to you about my 18-year-old girl problems. And he's like, you know, every situation just calls for him to pour a drink at this point. And it's really sad because Giles used to be so great and helpful. And he still is helpful, but they only use him when it's like, oh, I guess we'll call Giles because we're out of options. And that's just not great for his character. He's so wonderful. So I'd like him to go off and do something and maybe then come back after the whole world is burning down and they're like, oh, we clearly need Giles.
He needs a job.
Yes, desperately.
I don't know how he's paying for all this alcohol he keeps imbibing.
That is an excellent point. Let's jump to Willow now, too, because Spike brings up the idea that her friends think she's just going through a phase, and he doesn't make it exactly clear what he's talking about, and I think it's sort of like a double entendre between the fact that she is, you know, practicing Wicca and also now she is a lesbian and she's dating Tara. And this is clearly something that she's worried about, especially given Buffy's previous reaction to what Willow told her. And I think that I was really actually interested in the way that Tara reacted, because she didn't really... She had a little bit of a reaction, but it didn't sit with her the same way that Willow did. Of course, I think that's also because she doesn't know Willow's friends that well. But what did you think about Willow's little arc in this episode?
I like the fact that she has a cat. That was adorable.
Yes.
but other than that, I mean, I did like the idea that Spike was able to drop this bomb and sort of, like, send Willow into a spiral without affecting the other outsiders, which are Tara and Anya, who were locked in the bathroom the whole time. We'll get to why I'm frustrated with that story arc in a second. But the...
Because it's like the show itself.
I'll talk about it when we get to them, because I just wanted someone, them to, like, barge out and be like, you are all being stupid, but I guess this is a two-part episode, so I guess they can't do that just yet. But when Willow and Tara are together, it's like they're still... I just don't feel their connection, like, even in those beginning scenes with them. And so when Spike brought this up, I was like, oh, no, that totally makes sense, because maybe Willow is sort of questioning and, like, reexamining what we're seeing. Like, oh, is this actually something? Am I, like, together with this person? Do I want to be together with this person? Am I really a witch? Am I even practicing witchcraft anymore? Because right now all I seem to be doing is playing with cats and following Buffy around. So I feel like we're not getting enough of Willow, and for Spike to bring that up, it sort of puts her character into perspective for this whole season, because, like we've been saying, Willow hasn't really done anything this season. I feel like Willow's just, like, there for a couple scenes and then she's forgotten about, sort of like how this episode brought up about everyone. It's about Buffy and Riley this year, and that's kind of annoying at this point.
This also comes, like, right on the heels of Oz coming back, so it's sort of, like, even more complicated about, like, her relationship status. So it kind of works particularly well to me that her relationship status would be in question here when she's, you know, has all these emotions brought up from Oz coming back temporarily and then going to Tara, like, at this, you know, the show's a little older, so there's, you know, a little bit of a dated feel towards, you know, having a friend come out, so people are going to be like, I don't know about that. So I think it works particularly well in the placement of what we've seen with Willow's relationships.
Yeah, that does make sense. One of the characters that really, like, their little arc that bugged me in this episode was Xander, because it didn't give us any further insight into his character. The whole thing that Spike brings up with him is that, you know, he just gets in the way and his friends think he should, like, go off to boot camp or something like that and become a man or whatever the hell Spike was saying. And we've been talking about that since season one, the fact that Xander is... his talents don't quite match up with Buffy and Willow's. And for me, this arc, especially because, like you were saying, Brittany, like, Anya doesn't really come in and say anything in particular. it didn't change anything. It didn't bring anything to light that we haven't already talked about endlessly.
We had a whole episode about this. It's called the Zeppo.
Yeah, like, exactly.
I don't know why we keep beating this to death. Like, it's so frustrating because something has to click to progress Xander's character or get rid of him. Because at this point, it's just very annoying.
It's very like Ron in Deathly Hallows, but he doesn't have like any like evil ring making him do this. It's
there's really... no Horcrux. Yeah.
Like, I don't know why. I don't know. Like... He's so insecure.
Yeah, and so I feel insecure. Like he just keeps, like, they keep pushing him, and he gets upset about it, but then nothing happens. He doesn't, like, try to change. He just falls back into the same character. He'll take, like, two steps forward at the end of an episode, and then two episodes later, you forgot that that progression even happened because he's just back to being dopey Xander.
That's an excellent point, actually. Yeah, that's pretty much how I feel about him, too. And the fact that he is such a background character, like, it's nice to have him come in and be the comedic relief, but because he's not really doing anything, it feels very stagnant. And that's the same way that I feel about Giles right now, which is unfortunate, but his character seems very stagnant, and I think they're having trouble balancing out the storylines at this point. And I think in some cases they are moving forward in new and interesting ways, given, you know, the recent developments with Willow, and I do still think that the conversations that Buffy and Riley have are also interesting, but I never want that to be at the expense of the other characters, and every once in a while it really feels like that's the case.
I feel like it makes more sense for Giles to be stagnant because he had this calling for so long. Like, he knew he was going to be a watcher from a pretty young age and rebelled and then, like, went with it. So this is something, like, you know, pretty new for him to be just completely out of sorts, basically. Whereas for Xander, he's still very young. So he should be, you know, evolving in some way. Like, so, you know, if he's feeling useless, he should find something, like, to better himself. You would expect someone who's younger with more options available to them to do something. But for Giles, he's just come out of basically this really long career and is trying to figure out what to do with himself. Xander, on the other hand, it seems like he should have more options, and he's not taking them, which is frustrating.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I want to talk lastly about Buffy, because her issues in this episode, the ones that are brought up, is her superiority complex and her judgments. And Ariana, I know that you are not Buffy's biggest fan, and I really want to know what you thought about them sort of calling her out on this.
I mean, I don't know. Like, I think they're right. I feel like Buffy kind of showed that superiority complex today with Angel when he shows up to Sunnydale, which I know we're going to talk about later. So, I mean, I think they're right. I'm glad somebody's telling her, but people tell her all the time, and she just does not get it. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I think that that's a major frustration that I have, too, is that people are always subtly calling her out on it, blatantly calling her out on it, and she is going through the same cycle that we've seen before, where it's like, I am a lone wolf. I must do this on my own. Like, this is why I don't have chosen ones don't have friends. And, you know, we're back to this point where she is regressing into that, I'm the only one who can do this phase, which is a good story to tackle. And I'm not knocking the story arc, but I feel like we're just not getting anywhere with it at this point. We're in season 4, episode 20. Like, we've seen this before, and it's something that is going to keep plaguing her throughout her life, because being the chosen one does mean that eventually you're going to have to stand alone. But, you know, Buffy's just not taking the time to even do anything with her friends if there's a boy involved, which I think is the more frustrating thing. You can be the chosen one with friends. You're just choosing to push them to the side because you think that your love life is more important at the moment. when you're caught up
That's
in it.
That's true. Isn't that funny? She's never like, no, I can't have a boyfriend because I have to be the chosen one. That's always like her number one focus.
I will say, at least to me, this, we should keep in mind, this is happening after she has watched Adam kill Forrest. So she's just watched, you know, her, like a regular person, basically, who has a little bit of maybe ability in terms of being a soldier, but is still a pretty average person, just murdered right in front of her face. And it's somebody that she knows and that Riley cares about. So, you know, I can see that maybe in the back of her mind, like, seeing that scares her. Like, what if that was Xander? Or what if that was Willow? And it can be a defense mechanism to start pushing people away so they don't get hurt. And I could buy that being partly informing her trying to be kind of lone wolfy here.
I think that's very, perceptive of you, Caitlin. I wish that the show would be a little bit more explicit in showing us why she kind of acts the way she acts or where her insecurities come from. I think she is most endearing when she allows herself to be vulnerable, like in the episode with her dad and things like that. So I wish that they would, I know people think I'm crazy. They're like, oh my God, she's so vulnerable and so multifaceted. And I understand. Maybe if you're like looking at it really deeply, you can see that. On my surface level reading, I feel like, I don't know.
I was going to say, Caitlin brings up a great point, but at the same time, I feel like it's a great response, but I'd feel it more if I felt those relationships being nurtured and fostered throughout. Instead, yeah. It's Riley came along and Willow and Xander are cast to the side. So I don't feel the pain of her pushing them away and what a sacrifice that is for her, because she's pushed them away for a whole season when she didn't see someone killing innocent bystanders right in front of her. Like, well,
I don't know if I'm saying it's like a conscious decision that she's making, but because you're absolutely right. Like, they've been, everyone's sort of starting to go different ways, it feels like, with the whole new way they're living. But I could see that being sort of a subconscious thing mm-hmm. that she's dealing with.
Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely. But I'm saying, like, I wish that I could really grasp onto what you're bringing up, because I think that that's a great place for her character. And like I said, I'm glad that they keep bringing up the fact that it is ultimately down to the chosen one, and the people that she surrounds herself with are constantly in danger. And it's definitely something that is in the back of her mind, even if it's not explicitly addressed. But I just wish the show in general would really give us something with these relationships, because I cared so much about these characters. Well, that's saying a lot because I wasn't really into it, but I cared more about Willow, Xander, even Giles. Like, I still really care about Giles, but I definitely cared a lot more about them when they were doing stuff. And I feel like they haven't really done much in the latter part of season 4. So I hope that going forward, like, because we're almost in season 5, that the group comes back together, not just to be with Buffy, but to have some purpose for their own story arcs, that I could start caring again.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even think latter season 4. I think all of season 4. It's been very, they've all kind of been very isolated in their own A, B, and C plot lines.
And Willow actually brings that up. And I want to give Buffy a little bit of credit here, because she does ask them, like, what's going on with you? What happened? Like, why are we fighting about this right now when we need to be focusing on the problem? And I think in a way that Tara and Anya kind of just left the situation and didn't try to be like, hey guys, what's going on? We need to fix this, rather than just having everybody yell at each other. Buffy attempts to do that, but the way that she does it isn't great, because she's yelling at them and saying, what is wrong with you? And she's not necessarily taking responsibility herself. But I do think that it's interesting that I think Willow bringing up the fact that this has been brewing for quite some time is great because, yeah, we have felt it. And we've talked about it in previous episodes, the way that everybody feels a little isolated and the way that, you know, Giles, for instance, isn't really doing anything right now. And Xander's role in the show, how minimal it is. So they're definitely, I think they definitely know what is going on between these characters. And the fact that they're pointing it out is smart. Because we obviously picked up on it. But, Brittany, I want to know what you were going to say about Anya and Tara in the bathroom hiding.
Okay, so we started talking, like, about this episode with the fact that Spike is so, like, in tune with what will make these characters tick and what will easily set them against each other. And I really think that Tara and Anya combined have that same ability. And it was just so frustrating to be like, they're outside observers to this whole situation as well, because Anya's a little bit more ingrained just by the fact that, like they were pointing out, Xander's always around and in the way, and with Xander comes Anya. So I feel like they're in tune to what is making these characters fight against each other, and they're these little areas where once the group is broken apart, characters can retreat. So Willow's retreating with Tara, Xander's retreating with Anya, and they're not really having these conversations where they could be like, oh, Buffy's making me so angry, or oh my god, what is Willow doing? Like, those conversations aren't happening, at least we're not seeing that. So I just wanted them to, like, not just sit there and do something, because they know, maybe they just know that this is going to blow over or something, but it was just so annoying to see them outcasted again when I think that they have just as much perception into what's making this group fall apart as Spike does. And they're just like agents of nothing at this point, which they've been all season, like everyone else. I don't know. They had to like further isolate them from the isolation, which just really drove me bonkers.
Did anyone else feel the opposite of that, or are you guys pretty much on the same page?
I mean, I feel like they're sort of, they probably feel like they're part of what's being argued over, so they don't want to make things worse.
True.
Yeah, I guess so.
Something I noticed about Tara is, I've spent like this whole season thinking like Tara is super boring and being like, oh my god, like why would Willow ever be interested in her? She's so boring. But what I realized finally is that Tara is not boring, actually. Tara is just boring when she's with Willow, because I feel like she makes herself smaller around Willow. But Tara, like, by herself is actually really fascinating, and that frustrates me.
I like the image of Tara making herself smaller around Willow. Not that I like the image, but I think that makes sense. Like, I can see that being a thing. So, yeah, moving forward, I'll be interested to see what you guys think of her and can kind of glean from her interactions with people and what she ends up doing, her actions and all of that, because we really don't know too much about her still, and a lot of what we do know is in relation to Willow. So as she expands as a character, that's going to be interesting.
I do hope that, I know Willow brought this up where she was like, so off-campus housing and, you know, everyone can sort of live together and be happy. Maybe they can rent Giles' apartment. I don't know. But I just hope that there's like a spare room for Amy, because I think one day Tara's just going to be like, hey, let's turn that person back from a rat into a person again.
Oh, yeah. So, with two of them, they should be able to do it.
Yeah.
I'm just imagining Giles as a landlord now. Yeah. And it's kind of amazing.
It would give him a job and purpose.
And he would get income.
I like it. Very like Melrose Place, but with Giles.
Or like Three's Company.
Turn into a...
Switching gears, though, let's talk about Show of Voices. How many people were annoyed that Riley got mad that Buffy had sex with Angel when she and Angel were a thing?
Oh my god.
Riley, you can't get mad about that. That's like ridiculous. He's like, what do you mean you had sex with your boyfriend? Like, oh, Riley.
Riley, all right. his like cute, adorable 90s hair, if we go back to like season 4, episode 1, where I'm like, oh, he's so, it's so cute, and he's, no, now it's just like, shave his head and make him a horrible human being. He's so bad. He's such a bad character.
So bad. The only redeemable thing about Riley, the only reason I don't hate him to my core, is because he's played by an actor who plays an abolitionist on Underground. That's the only reason. Because sometimes I'm like, oh, it's okay. He's an abolitionist. But like, no. Riley, now you're boring and terrible.
I will say that when we first started Rewatchable and everyone was like, oh, the Gurr Arg thing, like, that's so great. And it's because, you know, it comes at the end of every episode. I just, now that's like my mantra for watching this show, because I just do it all the time subconsciously. I'm just like, oh, this show. So I don't know if it was just like, you know, people like it for a different reason because they watched Buffy for so long, but man, that is like right on point for my Buffy watching experience, especially scenes with Riley lately.
What about you, Caitlin?
Oh, Riley. I think it's funny because when Riley first showed up and all the newbies were like, why did the super fans not like him? And now you're starting to see why none of us like him. yeah, he is definitely obnoxious in this episode. I will say Angel doesn't help, as much as I love him. He does not help the situation. But Riley is not very... He doesn't give Buffy any credit, which is really terrible in terms of having a good relationship. So, like, give her some credit that you're in a relationship with her. She cares about you. And, like... He's just, yeah, that's my frustration, is he's not giving her any credit, and she has not given him reason to not, or to doubt her in that matter.
Yeah, I really don't want to defend Riley, but I'm going to, for the sake of discussion on this podcast, and just say that jealousy is not rational, so I can understand why he's jealous here and why he's upset that, you know, Buffy had sex with Angel, and I mean, that's about it. Like, it's not a good reason. It's not a good excuse to act the way that he did. And I think, Caitlin, you were absolutely right when you said that he's just obnoxious in this episode. And I got really annoyed with him too. But from his perspective, like, he is in love with Buffy, and, you know, he doesn't like the idea that she was with somebody else. And it just, it is what it is. It's not a good excuse, but it is what it is. But let's
I think you're right. I think that's true.
let's talk about Angel, though, because he does show up in Sunnydale to apologize and finally. Riley.
Grr, arg. Go back to your show. Yeah. There's no reason for you to be here.
Caitlin, no. I want to start with you, because obviously you do love Angel a lot, but you said, you know, he really didn't help.
No, I mean, like, he has just found out that Buffy's been dating somebody. Like, he had no idea until Faith told him in the last episode of Angel. So he's sort of got his own issues with this. So, you know, I love him, but he is his own little bit of annoying in this episode as well, because he doesn't really help, because, you know, Riley has all these suspicions and Angel's not being like...
He was a lot annoying. He was like a different character. I was like, who are you, Angel? I thought I liked you.
That's exactly how I feel about this, actually, because the way that they switch between the shows, you really see the bias, because in this episode, Buffy felt very superior to Angel, and the way that Angel was acting, he apologizes. I don't believe she does, and she feels like she's on the moral high ground. Whereas if you go back to the Angel episode, he was very much in the right with everything that he said. I mean, he was yelling at her, and like, that's not a great way to have a discussion, but he said he dropped a lot of truth bombs, and it feels like that got wiped away because of this episode.
Yes, he dropped a lot of tooth bombs, but then he wasn't even allowed to have the last word. She had to have the last word in that episode, and that was, like, I just wanted to, like, squeeze her hood because she was like, see, look at what Faith is doing to us. And I'm like, no, bitch, you are literally the one who is doing this. And she gets to have the last word, and then he comes here to apologize to this bitch, and I was like, why? She's terrible, Angel. You just told her she's terrible, and that's okay. Why?
She does tell him he was right, though.
She tells him he was right. They lead separate lives. Not, you're right, I am super obnoxious and mean and hoity-toity.
She says, I had no right to come to there and make judgments. So she does tell him that she was in the wrong in that way.
That's true. That's true.
Which she absolutely was. So.
Yeah. And the end of this discussion is basically like, yes, we are once again going to try to stay out of each other's way. Maybe this time it'll actually work.
These two shows depend on crossover episodes, so that's clearly not the case.
I don't know if I'd say they depend on crossover, but I think, like...
How many times did they cross over in one season?
I know. But also, that is the first season of Angel, so we'll have to see if that ends up changing, for better or for worse. And as Angel gets established as its own show, you know, whether or not they will rely on the connection with Buffy or they'll start building Angel up to be very much its own phenomenon.
I can't imagine watching Angel as just like just a sole Angel viewer and being like, I would be so frustrated whenever this blonde chick showed up and caused havoc and then just left. I'd be like, what is your deal? I mean, I'm still like that and I know Buffy, but it's,
she's really
I was thinking about that.
She's kind of like a villain, I feel like, on that show.
A little. Like
she would be like Darla on Buffy, being like, why are you coming here to mess with Angel's brain?
Yeah, or like Drew.
It's not a good life, yeah.
That's a good point. So, I know... I think this is so funny because Adam is obviously, like, the big villain here, and yet he always feels like a footnote, not only in our episode discussions, but in the actual show. But I do want to ask you guys, do you think that Adam is scary, keeping in mind that he did kill Forrest and that Buffy had to run away from him because she couldn't defeat him one-on-one?
I mean, I think he'd be scarier if he had an army, but like by himself.
I think he'd be scarier if he knew how to use verbs properly.
I definitely agree, Karen. I don't feel like he's a huge threat. It's just like, oh, Adam's around, even though he did kill Forrest. Like, that was horrible, but I feel like Forrest just happened to get in the way. Like, it wasn't even like Adam... I didn't feel really a lot of aggression. I just felt like, oh, Forrest, you got in the way. That's so sad. But, you know, I don't know what his end game is. Like, I kind of get it, but I just don't care enough. I'm more concerned about, like, when Riley and Buffy are going to break up than I am about what Adam's deal is.
Adam feels like a Power Rangers villain.
Yeah.
Just, like, ridiculously one-dimensional. I don't think he's scary at all. I don't care what he does. He could say he's blowing up the world tomorrow, and I'd be like, okay, I guess Buffy's going to save it because we have a season 5. I mean, he's not scary. Not like the way that Angelus was. Not even, I didn't think the mayor was scary either, but he's, at least the mayor was funny. This guy has no personality, and I don't know why they can't. Like, they had better villains with, like, the Institute and stuff. I don't know why they decided on Adam.
But, and I think Adam is also, like, distracting from this whole thing where, like, Riley's being hunted. You know, it's like Adam is just – there's so many different little plot lines that they're trying to make work that none of them are working. And it's the same thing that we were talking about with all of the characters. There's too much going on. And the focus is just not given to the proper areas of this season. So we're not really getting anything with Adam because, you know, we kind of forget about him sometimes because Buffy has to go and deal with Faith. And like that sort of sends Adam again to the background. And now Adam's supposed to rise up and be the big bad. But he's just not that threatening because we haven't given him enough attention. Like, he's been off in the woods doing God knows what. And then you have, like, you know, Spike coming in and, like, forming an alliance so quickly. And it's because he gets that promise. So, like, that felt like a little something with Adam, but not enough to warrant a big bad threat to the season.
Yeah, and I think, Ariana, you had a really good point in that Adam has no personality. And I think the reason why the mayor sticks out in our minds a bit more is because he very much had a personality. Like, yeah, he was a little weird and, like, he wasn't exactly... Sometimes he felt all-powerful, but he was also a little bit of a softy, too. But at the end of the day, like, he has that personality that makes you remember him, whereas Adam is just, like, a statue at this point.
And I guess he wasn't really the villain that season. Like, the real villain was Faith, and that was an interesting story arc, because she is kind of scary.
Right.
Because she seems so volatile. I don't know.
Yeah, but we got to forget about her now because we have other things to worry about, apparently.
Caitlin, I like this note that you made.
I had this realization while I was watching the episode that Adam is the Donald Trump of monsters because he's trying to make the Hellmouth great again. Like, he's a demagogue for the monsters. Like, he unites all the monsters so they can... Hashtag make the Hellmouth great again.
Oh, God. Yeah, that got just really real. And as our final big question of the episode, who does Brittany hate more, Buffy or Cora?
Oof. Well, Buffy has 3 seasons left to redeem herself. 3? Yeah, 3 or 4. Oh, God, how much longer do I have to watch Buffy? Right now, I'm in the midst of just not liking Buffy, but I still do not like Cora, and I still do not think that she has a purpose. I keep going back to that one line that I had about where, like, they're all the gang's getting back together, and, you know, they're all in charge of doing what they need to be doing, and then Cora's just, like, there. So I... Definitely Cora at this point, because I feel like Buffy has a shot.
My heart.
Poor Caitlin. Hopefully things will get better for you, though, because I, obviously, we really like this show, so it is a little hard sometimes to hear newbies be like, I don't like this, but also I think that's a really fair take on the show, and I like having a discussion about it. And I know, Brittany, you at least say that sometimes you feel better discussing it, you know, you like discussing it more than you like actually watching it, and I think that's really cool.
I think it's because it's not just, I feel like I'm not just giving a blanket statement. Like, I have a chance to be like, this is why I'm frustrated. And even though that frustration doesn't always change, it does, I feel better about, like, you know, spending 2 hours a week watching these shows, because if I was just like, oh, well, this is a waste of my time, then I wouldn't feel that way.
Yeah.
But instead, like, I'm like, okay, when I'm watching it and I'm getting frustrated and I'm upset with the way things are going, I'm like, why? I have to ask myself why. Like, I can't just come here and be like, I didn't like it.
Yeah.
And just sit there. I have to talk about it. And so through talking about it, even if I come here and I'm like, I literally have nothing to say, I just thought this was stupid, something will be brought up by the super fans or even another newbie who is like Mitch, who is all of a sudden in love with the show, where that blew my mind last week.
That's okay. Mitch needs some light right now, so I'm going to let Mitch have this one.
Yeah, we'll let Mitch have this one. But yeah, I like talking about it, even if I'm not necessarily enjoying it. I still have a good time talking with you guys about it, so that's good.
Yeah. I really enjoy the fact that you don't like it, actually, and I don't know if that sounds a little messy.
That is not true for anyone else on this podcast. As a super fan.
But the thing is, though, like, if we're just sitting here saying, oh my god, this is the best show ever, like, yeah, that's kind of fun for the super fans, but it's not a deep, interesting discussion. And I think you guys in particular have brought up things that I haven't seen before, and the fact that we can talk through those and be like, well, okay, now I definitely, like, see your side, or actually I disagree with that for, you know, these reasons, and I totally interpret it a different way. But that's why we're doing the podcast, you know, to have a discussion, not to just have this blanket, like, oh my god, I love this show so much. Okay, let's go on to next week. So I appreciate the discourse.
I have to agree with everything Brittany has said, because I've been thinking a lot lately, trying to put into words like why Buffy frustrates me, because I feel like people try and make me feel like a terrible feminist for not understanding why Buffy is so great, because she's so complicated and things like that. But I think what frustrates me as a viewer is that without the superpowers, if you took Buffy's superpowers away, I kind of feel like nobody would watch this show. Like no one would. Buffy, you wouldn't watch her as a character. She's too boring without her superpowers. Like, I kind of feel that for the trio themselves. Like, if you took Buffy's superpowers away, this trio, like, you would never, they wouldn't be like a Three's Company. No one would enjoy tuning into that every week. And that really frustrates me, versus like Angel, which I think is probably like, I'm going to just say it's like a lesser quality show. I think that's kind of like most of the time that's objective. But like, it doesn't matter if I think the plot is stupid, because those three characters, like without their superpowers, I would still watch them like making pancakes. So I think that's what frustrates me about Buffy. I want them to feel like full, like interesting people without their superpowers that I would actually be friends with, and I would never be friends with Buffy. I think she'd be terrible.
Yeah,
as she showed today.
I think we'll talk about this in the next episode, but just that final scene between Cordelia and Wesley, like that has nothing to do with anything else that's going on in the show, and that would be a show that I'd tune into. I just feel like the characters are a little better developed, because I think that they're given more time on Angel as opposed to here, because there's so much going on Buffy. There's so much backstory that needs to keep coming in. There's so many characters, there's so many threats, where Angel has a lot more room to explore right now, like the early days of Buffy, where you had, you know, they were setting the stage and getting things going and really giving time and attention to people. And I just feel like Buffy's lost touch with that, which is frustrating. Like Ariana was saying, like, I don't want to watch these characters that much when it's just them and they're not fighting something, because I feel like there's nothing there for them to fall back on. So hopefully, like, going into season 5, they find a way back to each other, because right now, as this episode showed, they're not in it together, and they need to figure out why that is.
Exactly. Yeah. And I'll be really interested to hear what the listeners think in terms of, if you take Buffy's powers away, you know, would you still enjoy watching the trio? Would you still watch a show about these characters? But I want to jump into favorite scenes and wrap up this episode of Buffy. My favorite part was just Miss Kitty Fantastico, because, oh my god, she was so cute. And I just love Willow's interactions with her. It was adorable.
The drama.
But I also really enjoyed your favorite scene, Caitlin.
Yeah, mine, I don't think anyone will be surprised, was the conversation between Buffy and Angel in the hallway, because I always enjoy seeing them together, and I enjoyed hearing Buffy say, "You were right." So,
Caitlin, are you ready for some groundbreaking observations from me? I enjoyed once they got to the hallway, because Angel felt like Angel from Angel. It's a lot of angels, but follow my train of thought here. And it wasn't Buffy making him a horrible human being. Well, he's not a horrible, not even a human being, but a horrible vampire, because he had his personality. Like, his personality came with him from Angel, and it felt so good. And I was like, thank goodness. Like, when they were just sort of like laughing a little bit, like, I loved that. So I was happy when I was watching it. I'm like, thank God Caitlin is on this week, because I have something positive to say about Angel interacting.
Yeah, I liked that moment where Buffy's going like, you did this and now you're here and making things worse. What are you doing? He's like, I was trying to make things better. Like, I don't know. I'm glad you liked it, Brittany, because I agree. I think that scene itself is... Angel feels the most like Angel in his whole presence in this episode.
And I think Buffy feels a little bit more mature than she has been. She is a lot calmer And she's not just yelling about things, like she's actually standing there listening to him and saying, you know, okay, these are my points and this is how I feel about it. And I mean, I, like I said before, I don't particularly like the idea that he apologized and that she didn't. I mean, she did say that he was right, but it felt like not, it didn't feel equal, but at the same time, I think she showed a maturity that she doesn't always show, especially when it comes to Angel. But, Ariana, what was your favorite scene?
Mine was Spike just, like, trolling everyone. I just thought it was really funny. He is able to manipulate everyone because he's got them. He's, like, such a weird bad guy. I love him.
And Brittany?
My favorite scene was the fact that they keep using Giles to keep me watching this show. So they had him singing again, which was wonderful. Although I hope they give us a break because they're really spoiling me now by having Giles sing every episode, but it'll get me through season 4.
He really does have excellent forearms. Like,
I'm telling
never...
you, that's why he won the poll.
That's really interesting, Brittany, because I never, like, thought of that, like, as an attractive part on a man. But now, like, now that you brought it up, I'm like, they are really beautiful.
Oh, yeah, it's a thing, I'm telling you. Also, when Spike scares him when he walks in.
Yes, the sound he makes was great. I loved it. And this is the first time that Anthony Stewart Head is actually playing the guitar. Before, he wasn't actually playing the guitar, but here he is. So that's a little fun fact for you.
That's good.
And for favorite lines, mine's kind of weird, but it's when Angel tells Riley, "Don't push me, boy." And I just really liked it because I like Angel when he's not this, like, angsty person. I like it when he's very much in control. And if you compare Riley and Angel, like, Riley is just a child. And I like the fact that Angel just called him out on that, and it just was great. Caitlin, what was your favorite line?
So mine is Buffy and Riley are talking after Angel leaves, and Riley thinks that Angel's been evil because he has no idea, and Buffy says, "He's not bad." And Riley says, "Seriously? That's a good day? Well, there you go. Even when he's good, he's all Mr. Billowy Coat, King of Pain, and girls really..." I mean, the sentiment's kind of gross, but I just sort of laughed at the Mr. Billowy Coat, King of Pain description.
Yeah. Yeah. And Ariana?
My quote is when Spike is talking to Willow, like, telling her stuff, and she's like, "I am a whiz, if ever a whiz there was." So, that was cute.
I knew that line was coming, obviously, but, like, you could just feel that line building up, but it was still great when she said it. Brittany?
Mine was when, right after Spike scares Giles, and he goes, "You know, for someone who's got Watcher on his resume, you might want to cast an eye to the front door every now and again." Because it's true, Spike just
keeps
walking in.
Why doesn't he lock it?
Like, you invited a vampire in. Of course he's going to just randomly show up all the time.
I mean, we've seen them rescind invitations. Like, they did that when Angel went evil, so you'd think they'd just do that again for Spike.
Yeah. Clearly they're unconcerned. Yeah. All right, let's jump into Angel episode 120, Warzone, now. In this episode, there's finally some diversity on this LA-based show as a gang of demon-hunting kids gets caught in Angel's crossfires. Meanwhile, Cordelia and Wesley try to help a very sad and wealthy client who likes things that feel good in your mouth. So let's kick this off with this wealthy new client. And Cordelia's, I think, honestly, serious thought about prostituting herself out to him. Did this make anyone else feel extremely uncomfortable?
Look, I wish I could say that I've never had this conversation before with a friend, but I mean, everyone has thought about, even this week, I was like, you know what, my health care is ending. And my friend was like, "Well, let's look around here. Who looks rich?" And, like, they have health care in their job that we could marry. So, I mean, I get it, Cordelia. It's tough times. It's tough times. But I don't think she would actually do it. So
I don't think so either. But just the idea that she was thinking about it, I felt bad for her. But at the same time, I really like this side of Cordelia still, because when she was on Buffy, she was always the rich, popular girl. And now it's I just really enjoy seeing the humanity in her and her concerns and her not getting everything that she wants. I mean, that sounds kind of horrible. I don't dislike Cordelia, I promise. I just like seeing her as somebody who struggles and overcomes their obstacles.
I agree. I like seeing her this way.
What did we think of the demon brothel?
It was weird.
Yeah, I mean, if Cordelia's prostitution conversation didn't make you uncomfortable, then a demon brothel will do the trick. So, yeah, it was uncomfortable and weird, but it kind of makes sense, I guess. Like, there was, like, underground demon fight clubs. Why wouldn't there be demon brothels? I mean, L.A. is a crazy place.
Yeah, exactly. I like it for the reason that it continues to expand the world and, like, intertwine demons and humans in a lot of ways. Like, we see this so much more in Angel than we do on Buffy, with, you know, demons just being sort of mixed into the world. And even though, like, a demon brothel's kind of weird, like, just the idea of more demons being integrated into the world, I like.
Yeah, it's not like demon shows up, we must kill and capture demon. Like, instead it's like, oh, what is the actual underlying problem here? Like, the demonness is wiped away. It's like, oh, the problem is that this is a brothel. Like, it's not mm-hmm. so much that it's a demon brothel, it's the fact that it's a bigger issue. It's, you're not immediately against them when they show up, which we've talked about a lot when we've discussed Angel.
I find it really interesting that the humans are so involved in the demon world here in Los Angeles on Angel. Unlike, like, the Institute knows about demons, which is kind of like the lawyers knowing about demons here, like, they're equivalent to me here on Angel. But I think it's really interesting that, like, regular people and just, like, keep it on the down low. Like, it's, like, underground. Like, demons are, like, drugs or something. Like, everyone kind of knows about it. It's, like, done in secret. Like,
yeah, on Buffy, the demons feel very much like a plot point. And on Angel, it feels like they feel so much more three-dimensional. You, not only can they be a plot point and the sort of demon of the week kind of thing, but it's also, like, you get a peek into their lives. They have lives. They have purposes. They have jobs, for better or for worse. And the fact that you can see their personalities versus, okay, this thing is attacking this person, we need to kill it, is very interesting. And now we do talk about it a lot whenever we talk about Angel, but I think it's really important to continuously keep that in mind as well. But one of the big points in this episode was this introduction of these new street kids and the fact that there's, you know, all of a sudden we have this major influx in diversity for this episode, and that these kids are living on the streets, but they're also fighting vampires. And it was the tone of this episode felt very different to me, and especially the end, that conversation between Wesley and Cordelia felt a little bit of a PSA about teenage homelessness and race issues and all of that. But at the same time, like, I kind of didn't mind. I actually liked that they decided to tackle an issue and talk about that issue through the analogy and the metaphor of vampires and vampire hunters. But did you guys like this, not like this? Do you think they did it well, or do you think they could have done it better?
I think they did it really well. And I think it might be because of how much I hate the way Glee did PSA episodes. So when I see a show tackling a bigger issue in this type of way and not making it too over the top preachy, but also really driving home the point that they want to make, I appreciate it when it's well done. And so I didn't feel like it was too in your face, because they didn't lose sight of the story that they were trying to tell in place of making a point.
Caitlin or Ariana?
I don't know that I have a lot of thoughts on this, so I'll defer to Ariana.
I did like it. I liked the kids. I liked how they didn't get turned into stereotypes, which is something that's really frustrating for me watching like 90s shows or 2000s shows, the way that they treat people of color, especially like kids, urban kids. So I liked that, you know, that the gang itself was diverse. There was like black kids, there's Latino kids who had fortunate accents that were clearly not their real ones because everyone made you talk like that in 2001 if you run a TV show. But there was also like white kids in there too. So like they were all kind of different kids, but I liked that they like race was a thing, and because it's always a thing if you're a person of color. So like I really liked when he said, I don't need advice from some middle class white dude that's dead. Because, yeah. I mean, it was funny, but it was also true. And, like, that's how I felt all week when we've had middle-class white dudes being like, it's all going to be okay. but so I liked that. But I also liked that they were very much a unit separate from themselves. Like, his relationship with his sister was really, I felt, important in grounding them and making them three-dimensional. So that's what I liked about it.
Mm-hmm. And I read a bit, too, about the way that they kind of flipped the script on this and made the kids very diverse and made the vampires white and talking about the purity of the blood. And that's not always how that goes. Vampirism can often be shown as, like, gang violence and that kind of thing. And they bring that into the aspect of vampirism. But in this case, it's kind of the other way around. And you have all these diverse kids fighting against the white people who want to keep the blood pure and all of that. So that was another way that I think they tackled this really interestingly. But I also really liked the brother-sister dynamic. And it was, I mean, we've only seen these characters in this episode, and yet it was so heartbreaking when Gunn had to kill his sister.
Oh, that made me so mad and sad and just everything. I would have loved if they could have, I mean, I guess it's good character development, but I think it would be almost better if she had gotten to stay and be like an evil vampire who was like not always evil, who like had a soft spot for her brother, but was evil in the background, and he was all conflicted all the time.
Do you think she honestly had a soft spot for her brother? Because remember back in season one of Buffy, they do say, I mean, of course, we've learned since then that vampires do have personalities, but also vampires, because they are soulless demons, will say anything they can to manipulate humans into becoming vampires.
I think she did. Or if she wanted to kill him, she would have killed him already, I think. I mean, yes, we had turns like Angelus, but we know Angel was already like a terrible person. Because I don't know. I feel like we have other people like Spike and even Harmony who, I guess she eats people, so she's bad. But they just seem like really, like they still retain their character. So mm-hmm. Maybe since he was like her only connection, like her only family member, I can see some of that fondness like staying.
See, I felt like she was kind of torturing him with the, like that she once had that, but she didn't anymore. So she was kind of taunting him with the relationship that they used to have. So I didn't really see any fondness there. I saw cruelty.
That was my hope. That's my hopefulness. I want to make vampires like people.
I just want to bring up something that I read about this in particular, which was the actress, Michelle Kelly, who played Alana. And she says that there is this sort of twisted connection. And let's see, it says in here, I'm honestly just on Wikipedia, but it says, Kelly explains she twisted that connection by imagining the isolation and raging despair her character would feel after being made a vampire. Quote, all I wanted is my brother. That's where I got the impetus to go into that ugly space. It was just the other side of loving. And I think that is so interesting that there is a connection there. There is a relationship, but it's also a very dark place that she goes to. And that even though it's still love, it is a twisted kind of love.
That's interesting, because if you're saying it's like the other side of loving, I can totally see how that could very easily turn into hate. Like, how could you let them do this to me? you're supposed to protect me. And it's like, because the whole time also she's saying like, this is going to end badly because you're so obsessed with this. Someone's going to get killed. And I can see her vampire self placing the blame on him. So that's interesting.
Indeed. And I mean, this really does change Gunn. It's unfortunate that it has to come after he's forced to kill his sister, but he lets the vampires go per Angel's request, so nobody else has to die. And I think for Gunn in particular to do that, you know, like I said, we've only seen him for this episode, but his personality was so strong that before he had that run-in with his sister, I don't think he ever would have agreed to do that. But now he sees the sacrifices, and that sacrifice is suddenly extremely personal, and he doesn't want anybody else to get hurt.
Yes, that is true.
Another fun fact I read about was that it costs $5,000 to dust a vampire. They kind of developed a new way to do it with this episode. And I was actually really impressed by that, like, fly-through shot where the vampire is, like, jumping in the air and they dust him and he kind of falls to dust as he comes down. And, yeah, just, can you imagine, though, like, $5,000 just to kill a vampire?
Seems like such a waste of money.
Yeah. Fair. But it looked really cool.
I still don't understand how the dusting thing works. I feel like it makes no logistical sense. Because didn't they decide to do that so that they wouldn't have a bunch of, like, dead vampires laying around? Like, that was their rationale? But that would be so much cheaper. So, I don't know.
True. As a final point for this episode, Angel and Gunn meet on the rooftop. And Angel says, or Gunn says, I don't need help. And Angel says, I might. And I think that obviously they've sort of left the door open for Gunn to return. Would you guys like to see that?
Like in a Kate role? I mean, I would love for him to replace Kate.
In any role, in, you know, whether he shows up for another episode, whether he has a larger arc.
Yeah, I mean, I like how they keep having people come back. I guess they haven't really done that here, but like how Buffy does that. So I would really like to see him come back, obviously. I think he's great. I think he's young like Cordelia, which is, I just realized, she seems older. It would be nice to have some youth on this show.
Yeah, they could bring him back, but like in a like long time, like when I forget about him.
Yeah, like they did with Faith, and it was like, oh, surprise.
Right. You're still around.
Cool. Awesome.
Maybe now he has, like, an army of kids.
Maybe. That seems like it could be dangerous, given that they're children. But also, it seems like those kids obviously were fighting for a reason, and they probably lost people in their lives. So kind of hard to turn that away when you know that they have their reasons for doing it, even if they are just kids. Okay, let's jump into favorite scenes now. My favorite scene was when Angel saves Alana's life and then sort of gives the kids a talking to, because clearly they just know that he's a vampire and they want to kill him. And he proves that he is still a good person by saving her life and putting himself in front of that dark thing and getting it through the hand, which looked pretty painful. And they decide to let him go because of it. But I liked that tension in that scene. And you're like, are they going to actually try to kill him? Or is this a big enough statement that they'll kind of back away? And they backed away.
I have a question. You young whippersnappers.
Yeah.
I have a question about that scene. Why is it Alana? Like, who, like, sent that dart to Alana? Was that, like, somebody trying to shoot Angel and they, like, messed up?
She tripped a wire.
Oh, okay.
Because they had the whole place booby-trapped, and when she fell, she tripped a wire and then almost died.
Got it. Okay.
Caitlin, what was your favorite scene?
So mine was when Angel is pretty much able to stop a whole massacre from happening just by talking, because, you know, Nicole, apparently.
I was getting really nervous about that guy with the fire, though. Like, I was like, can you just put that out now? he was just like whipping that around like it was nothing. Ariana, what was your favorite scene?
Mine was when Angel gets trapped in that box and he can't get out. And then Cordy and Wesley come to save him and they're like, why didn't you use the cell phone? And he's like, oh, cell phones, cell phones. I'm your boss. No cell phones.
I say when we use cell phones.
And Brittany, we talked about this a little bit, but if you'd like to expand.
Oh, yeah. I just really like the final scene between Angel and Gunn on, like, that rooftop. I thought it was just really nice way to end the episode, and it left the door open for Gunn to return.
Yeah. You know, it really... I love how Angel is about... Like, Buffy is about saving people. But I love how Angel is about saving souls. Like he said last week, I was like, oh, Angel, that's so beautiful. Because when he says... like, I don't need help. And he's like, I might. He's like, so great. Sorry.
No, I understand what you mean, though. And I think the difference between saving people and saving souls is actually a huge one. And I like that that is something that Angel has dedicated himself to.
It kind of fits this idea of being a more mature way of looking at the world that Angel has. Like, it's a little more nuanced that even if you save a person, you might... like, they're still probably going to be, like, horribly traumatized or whatever, but they kind of just move on, whereas the Angel crew, like, focuses on, like, more of, like, the inner workings of people, and I think that just sort of reflects that Angel's a bit more of a mature and nuanced show.
Yeah, like, he recognizes that this kid, just because his life is saved, he's not done being saved. And he's there. He's acknowledging that. So, so great.
Jumping into favorite lines now, mine comes at the end as well. And it's just when Gunn says, what you doing? And Angel goes skulking professionally. I feel like that is his profession at this point.
I love that he's so willing to, like, make fun of himself about it, too. Like, he mentions it all the time, like, that he's all, like in the last episode where he was like, I'm a dark, shadowy person, but I have a big mouth kind of thing. Like, he makes fun of himself all the time.
It's great. It really, because Angel can get so heavy, both as a show and a character, that, like, you really need that to kind of bring yourself back up. And the fact that he can poke fun at himself is pretty great. Caitlin, what was your favorite line?
So mine is when they're meeting with David at the party about what their case is. And he says, are you familiar with Dungeons and Dragons? And Angel says, yeah, I've seen a few. And Wesley goes, you mean the role-playing game? So I'm like, oh, so Dungeons, Dragons, Dragons are real. Okay.
He was in hell for, like, a long time, so I'm sure had some weird stuff.
Yes. Ariana?
Mine was when Cordelia is talking about how she loves the smell of money. And Angel tells Wesley, she's not just saying that. I hide some in the office sometimes and watch her. And I just thought that was really funny. And also, I am absolutely 100% convinced that Angel's soul is in love with Cordelia, but his brain has just not processed it yet. So that is what I am convinced of.
And Brittany, what was your favorite line?
Second to actually I forgot about the part where Wesley gets the coffee and he's like, I ordered a coffee. It must be in here somewhere. And it's like all the whipped cream and craziness of coffee. But my favorite line was really when they're in the convertible and Cordelia says, reality is a choice, Wesley. You see what you want to see and I'll see what I want to see. She's like imagining that she can smell the salty air and is on a beach somewhere. And he is looking at the reality of the fact that they're sitting by dumpsters watching a homeless guy push a cart.
Yeah, and not to, like, put too fine a point on it, but that also feels very relatable these days in not a great way, but it is what it is, I guess.
Yeah,
not to bring this episode back down to reality, but there you go. Okay, so wrapping this up, as usual, if you would like to get in contact with us, please keep it spoiler-free for the newbies, and you can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com, hit us up on Twitter at re_watchable, find this post on hypable.com, or visit rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. We also really appreciate any feedback you guys can leave us on iTunes, especially if you would like to rate us 5 stars. And if you rate us 5 stars, then I will skulk on rooftops, ready to offer advice at any time you need it.
The wisdom of Karen.
Yes. I don't know how great I'd be at that, but, you know, I'd give it a try. I'd put full effort into it. Okay, so let's jump into listener feedback. We have a couple from Twitter this week. And Caitlin, would you like to tackle this first one?
Sure. Mandy Kay says, I just realized Warzone is the episode we meet Gunn. J. August Richards is the best. And I said the same thing. I was like, oh, this is the Gunn episode.
Is this that his name? It's awesome. He has such a like regal name. J. August Richards.
Yes.
Yes. And Ariana, you want to get this next one?
Yes, this is from Vicky Nyogi. I'm sorry if I pronounced it wrong. The Gunn reference at the end, very smooth. Was there a Gunn reference at the end?
I don't remember.
Very smooth of you for catching it, Vicky.
You may need to explain it to the rest of us.
It was probably on the end of the last podcast episode.
Oh, maybe.
Yes. Maybe. I don't know. Hmm. I would assume so.
Who was on that one?
Someday? I was, and I don't remember it.
I edited it, and I don't remember.
Maybe someone said something about a like Gunn and we were just oblivious because we didn't know who Gunn was. Well, I didn't know who Gunn was.
Is that his name? That's such a, like, cool name.
You just really like this character and actor, don't you? He has great names.
I like his names. He's okay. I'm not, like, obsessed with him yet. I just like his name.
Brittany, you want to take this last piece of feedback?
Sure. Balia Beth at Balia Bai asked Natalie about this James Marsters interview. She says, just listened to Rewatchable 183 about the interview with James Marsters, and I would love to hear the audio as well. Thanks. I don't know what's going on with that. It was supposed to be in a post for Hypable, and then it was going to come on here, but it's spoilery, so I think we're still figuring out what to do with it, but it'll show up eventually. Mm-hmm.
It's not time sensitive, so I think Nat is holding it until the opportune moment. But it will show up eventually. We're just going to keep you in suspense until then. So our final thing for this episode is Brittany's brainstorms / Ariana's assumptions. This was Ariana's answers, but I changed it because I can do that, I guess. it's for Buffy 421 Primeval and Angel 121 Blind Date. Take it away, newbies.
Well, this season is finally almost over. My God, I still have 2 episodes left. I could not believe that I saw we have 2 episodes left. It'll never end.
Meanwhile, I'm like, oh my God, we're only 2 episodes away from the finale.
How long can this go on? Like, I feel like they finally set up something here where there's like, you know, to be continued. So I was like, oh, great. We've actually just watched the first half of the season finale. No, that's not true at all. So I think we're
gonna... Oh, that is weird. Is it like a 3-part season finale? Oh, I feel like it doesn't warrant this.
Yeah, because what are they going to do? Make Adam a threat for 3 episodes? That's impossible. He's barely a threat for 1.
Primeval. The primeval is not Adam because he's so dull.
It can't be. It can't be. Like, maybe there's some, like, bigger
maybe
operation.
Maybe Willow
going on.
Finally becomes evil.
Finally. That would be.
And then she kills Tara.
That's horrible.
Like, I've been saying she was going to.
Oh, my God.
No, I actually like Tara. Maybe Tara can kill bad Willow and Tara can be the new Willow. Primeval, I don't know.
It's probably going to be about Adam because they think that they've given us enough to go on where we think Adam's a big bad.
He's so bad. Oh my gosh.
Watch out. Or maybe it's about Riley being a horrible human being.
That would actually be a great twist if Riley turned out to be the bad guy.
Because Adam considers him a brother. So
he did show up at Adam's lair at the end of the episode.
The fact that Adam has a lair, he doesn't deserve a lair. Like, Spike can't even have a lair. Like, he has, like, that little crypt, but that's not cool and awesome. Gosh.
So isn't his lair, like, inside a tree? This is so weird.
Yeah. Well, either way, hopefully.
Like, one of those Yosemite trees, right? Like,
yeah. Hopefully we'll be wrapping this nonsense up soon. And only two more episodes to go, so woohoo.
Yeah, so basically we're saying we don't care. We're terrible. I'm sorry. Send the hate mail.
No matter who the big bad turns out to be in the next episode, we don't think it's warranted.
It won't be exciting. Blind Date, I am excited for that one because my theory is that it's, see, I just assume all Angel episodes are sitcoms. So Cordelia gets set up on a blind date. And turns out an Angel also gets set up on a blind date. Who can set up? So Wesley is setting up Cordelia. And Angel gets set up by... we don't have enough characters on this show.
Gunn.
Someone else.
Up on a date.
Gunn. Because Gunn, like, runs into Cordelia. And they're like, oh, hey, they're the same age. And they're like, oh, so cool. I just met this guy. And I think he's kind of rich because he wears, like, trench coats, Cordelia. So I think you would like him. And then it turns out it's a blind date with Cordelia and Angel. And then in the middle of it, they have to, like, go save the world. And she gets to ride in a convertible.
Yeah, that's.
I like that little detail at the end.
Sounds pretty good.
Great. Awesome. Well, we'll see if that pans out. But that's it for these two episodes. Thank you again for listening. And we will talk to you next week. Until then, I am Karen.
I'm Caitlin.
I'm Mariana.
And I'm Brittany.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.